Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 300 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sending you over to Jason Rugard for a rundown.
All right, on the episode 300. Man, we're here. Tonight we got the podcast, a little trivia about Arnold Schwarzenegger. We're going to be talking about the reimagined trailers that are getting very popular of current movies, recut to formulate 1990s style television and movies. Talk about Russell Crowe joining Tom Cruise in the Mummy sequel or reboot, and these I Am Wrath posters for the new John Travolta movie that are copying Tom Cruise posters. So we'll get into all this. We got some reviews for older movies and then trailers for newer movies for The Founder, Bad Moms, Inferno, Snowden, and the new Nicolas Cage movie, USS Indianapolis. What do you think about that?
To be fair, Nicolas Cage is in Snowden as well.
He is, so it's good to see him doing the B-movie.
Actually, I think he's in every single one of these movies.
He at least cried out for
him. He's there somewhere, yeah.
I can see him in a capacity here. Let's get into this trivia, because this is some trivia that I found a little bit interesting. I went back and looked at a Schwarzenegger movie. This week, we talked about doing a retro on a Schwarzenegger movie, and I was looking up some stuff. And now, he was nominated for 2 Golden Globes in his career.
And he won one.
He did win one. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, you are very up on your game here. Which one did he win it for?
I Like Schwarzenegger. It was the Hercules thing, wasn't it?
No. Good what God, was it wasn't Hercules.
No. But he was...
It was Stay Hungry.
Thank you, yes.
Where he played the bodybuilder in, it's really a Sally Field, a Jeff Bridges movie that has bodybuilder elements in it. And it's 1976 Most Promising Newcomer Award. But he was nominated one other time for Best Actor, Musical or Comedy category. What was the film?
Well, it was Junior, but...
It was Junior! How the fuck terrible. Was he nominated for Junior?
I know.
When you think of all of the things he could have been nominated for, I even think his Total Recall performance was... nomination worthy if you're talking about Golden Globes. They could have snuck it in there somehow. But or Twins, you think, or even Kindergarten Cop. But I mean, that's like saying Jingle All the Way was Golden Globe worthy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was just because it was so kind of weird, you know? I don't know why.
Well, Emma Thompson was also nominated for Best Actress in a Musical Comedy for the same film. So they were up, you know, as an acting duo. And that movie is... probably his worst in the comedy side, right? If not his worst overall.
I mean, I would say. I mean, I can't really think of anything worse.
Yeah.
Can you? I can't.
No,
I'm trying.
Can. Yeah, no.
Trying to think of something worse.
That's a pretty bad one. It's because it's a bad movie, too, on top of it. It's not funny.
Right,
it's
right. Long. Like you say, I mean, I don't count Stay Hungry. I don't count Hercules. And I don't really... No, I mean, I don't really count the villain.
Do we count Red Sonja as part of Schwarzenegger canon, or is that just a cameo?
But it's not worse.
Yeah. I can't argue.
You know what I mean?
I will not argue that. Yeah.
So I don't know. Even if you count it or not count it, it's not worse than Junior. I mean, Junior's just... I don't know. It's indescribable why it's bad, really, too. Because it's an interesting idea for a movie. I understand why he tried to do it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad you got that one, though. I thought that was going to be a tricky one, but you nailed that one, so well done. You are a fan. You're in the kingdom of fandom. Okay, let's talk about Russell Crowe, who is somewhat making a career comeback, it seems, especially with his appearance in The Nice Guys. He seems to be retooling his image, I feel, a little bit from the blowhard asshole he was 15 years ago to, like the standoffish kind of thing.
He does feel a little softer now.
Yeah,
doesn't he?
It seems like he just
maybe just because he's been out of the limelight.
Or he's more comfortable in a supporting capacity and not having to carry things. You know, after Gladiator, they were pushing him as the next leading man. And things that he's been appearing in, like Man of Steel and this, and he directed a film, the Divine Water Seeker or whatever that was.
Oh, right, yeah.
The Diviner.
I don't know the hell it is.
He was a director and a co-star in that, really. So I think
but that was out of the limelight, really, still. Right?
He's in a secondary career push, wouldn't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think after he sang, that was kind of rock bottom, wasn't it? No.
A lot of actors do that, though. I mean, Kevin Costner, Keanu Reeves, these guys, and let's just name a few. formed bands and kind of toured these bands. And then
I'm not even talking about that. I mean, I don't even know. Was he in a band?
Doesn't he have a band? Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah. I'm pro. Hell yeah. He's got a band.
The Crows.
The Counting
Russell
Crows.
And the Crows. Yeah. No, I was talking
Ruffling
about
feathers here.
Yeah, you know, the whatever, the Spanish movie. What was that? What's that movie?
A
where he sings? No, in the movie. The musical.
Oh, Les Miserables?
Yeah, there you go.
Les Mis? Yeah, that was bad. But, I mean, his low point had to be when he appeared in The Man with the Iron Fist. What the fuck was he doing in that movie? I mean, this is an Academy, a double Academy Award nominee winner, and he's in, like, this really shitty movie directed by the RZA.
Yeah, but people do. I mean, I can understand that. That's kind of a side project thing. That's not. It was never really going to be a big movie. And, you know, to be fair, people, other actors have taken roles like that.
I've wanted to go back and rewatch Proof of Life. I haven't seen that since the theater. I very recall it. I remember liking scenes of it. I always thought that it had David Caruso's best screen performance in that movie as like the sidekick mercenary guy, if I recall correctly. But it is on HBO Go. Might have to take a look at that.
Yeah, that one's kicking around here and there. I don't remember liking it.
Yeah, neither do I. But it is the movie that, for whatever reason, was, you know, her affair, Meg Ryan's affair with Russell Crowe, kind of vanquished her off of screens forever. You know, she that was like the nail in the coffin for her.
I don't know. I don't know if that. I mean, that may just be an interesting, you know, piece of that movie. I think that movie itself kind of, right? I mean, she had technically done quite a few movies leading up to that that hadn't really made very much money.
And then after that, she did Kate and Leopold with
Hugh. Oh, there you go.
Sorry, with Hugh Jackman, which that made a decent amount of money. But then you got In the Cut, which was just,
yeah,
you know, obviously that speaks for itself. But we do have Russell Crowe news here somewhere, and that is the fact that he is joining Tom Cruise in this Mummy reboot, and they are talking about, you know, as Russell Crowe says, that it's designed to scare the shit out of you.
I don't get it
for a second.
Right? Aren't these supposed to be fun? I thought.
Well, wasn't Dracula Untold the first step in this unofficial, like, kind of Marvel universe?
Yeah, it's dead.
Taking, yeah, and that didn't go anywhere, and that's not for lack of it not having any sort of merit, because it was entertaining, but it wasn't going to be some sort of, you know, franchise.
It was a fine movie, yeah, but it was never put there's no way that that type of movie, you know, and the way that they made it would ever have been a big thing. It was way too serious.
So I'm very curious, though, what this is going to be, and it has to, if it's that dark.
But it's the Mummy. How could it be that scary?
Right.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's my question. What do you do with the Mummy to make it actually frightening? And if you do make it frightening, are you talking about a real horror movie at that point?
That's what I'm most interested to see, is big stars like Crow and Cruise in actually a movie that fits in this horror genre and isn't action film. Or
yeah, don't you feel like it's going to be action and not horror? That's what I think this is a little bit. It just sounds like hot air to me.
I think these early statements are also, I mean, this obviously is going to be PG-13 to reach our largest possible audience. This will not be an R-rated film. And on top of that, I think this is all just kind of PR to let you know that this isn't going to be the Brendan Fraser, Indiana Jones style adventures that we had from 10 plus years ago, which isn't a bad thing. But I did like those movies for what they are, especially now looking back on it.
I like all the Mummy movies so far.
They do grow in a little bit of appeal as they go back. They are movies that are for sure designed to play on Saturday afternoon, cut up with commercials.
Yeah, that's all I thought they were. I mean, a lot of those Stephen Summer movies are just like that, you know, and that's why his movies kind of shine then. But they do have that. He does kind of have that Spielberg eye when it comes to action. So there's a little bit more added to his stuff than just a lot of the throwaway action movies if you were to go back and watch them.
Curious why he hasn't been given one of these Marvel films, because he is a very accomplished director within these blockbuster genre, really.
And he'd probably be pretty good at it, right? I think so.
Yeah, and his name has never been floated around for any of those kind of projects.
No, he did G.I. Joe, right?
Right, yeah, you're right.
That's kind of in the same vein.
I guess they can't use the same people. If you've been on like the Hasbro franchise side, you can't get
any of the other ones.
The antitrust type deal.
I don't know. Don't tell that to Ryan Reynolds.
Let's talk about this trailer reimagining that's going on lately. And I pointed out to you a couple weeks back that somebody had re-edited a Game of Thrones intro with the 1990s style kind of Hercules intro, you know, to that. And was it Xenia? Mm-hmm. I can never say that word. Enya?
Yeah, Xena.
Xena, thank you.
I don't know what the hell you're trying to say.
I'm trying to say Enya. Enya being live.
Enya's a singer. That's what you listen to when you take your bubble baths.
How do you know this, Snowden? How do you know this? All right, so you watched the Civil War trailer that was recut 1995 style. What'd you think?
Yeah, I want to see this version of the movie. This really makes me want to watch 90s movies. I think they nailed it pretty much exactly. I mean, I do love the VHS effects that they put on these, but those are just kind of like, you know, effects you throw on here. It's the devil in the details in these, you know, the fact that it's Touchstone, right? And this would be a total Touchstone release. And the font, the use of that font is such a 90s font.
And throwing the Academy music, Award, you know, the music for sure.
The way that the trailer's cut with the voiceover and as well as the choice of shots in it, it really does play like a 90s movie, and I really want to see it. I don't know if people are that aware of 90s movies or not, but absolutely jack shit happens in a 90s movie, and you know that there's a lot of stuff that happens in Captain America Civil War. But in the 1995 version, jack shit happens.
Yeah.
And I mean, seriously, jack shit happens.
A lot of shots taken from Clear and Present Danger trailer and Under Siege 2 and things like that you can obviously see. But this thing is cut beautifully, and it reminded me of the old John Grisham film.
I know, right? Well, that was the font as well. And the weird Civil War thing. Like, they really made the Civil War big and stuff. And I felt like... like, I don't know. It's not like the American Civil War.
No, but they get the flag behind it. It's all patriotic and whatnot.
It was very weird.
You know, there was that wave of patriotism, too. In the early 90s.
Sure. I mean, they would have definitely cast Harrison Ford in some capacity in this 1995 movie.
It wouldn't be exactly, if not as Captain America.
Right.
He'd have been fucking Tony Stark. Oh, yeah. No, it really made me want to watch it. And I love this kind of stuff. Watching this, like you said, just brings you back to that era when trailers were – they didn't – I mean, we'll talk about some trailers later in the show that I feel like I saw the whole movie. This – it made you thirsty for more, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they always caught those like seminal moments in 90s movies where in the trailer it makes it look like they're important and they're big, and they're always the throwaway shit moments. You know, when someone turns their head and says a one line that's just not important at all, but they cut it together in the trailer – to make it look like that scene's super important. And then when it plays out in the movie, as I said before, you know, jack shit happens in it.
And that fucking music, you do recognize that music. That is the music that you and I put in a trailer for our student film and films. You recall that. That's the Five Laws of Power music right there as well. So I instinctually respond to that. But these things are really fun. I hope they continue to do these and this doesn't get too blown out of proportion. You know, honest trailers – used to be really fun. I think those are getting a little played out now. But this has that kind of same fun that used to have for me now. So seeing them do that and to get Don Fauntleroy's voice in there, you know, I don't know what they cut that from with the reluctant soldier and that. It's fucking worked perfectly though, just fucking perfectly. And like you said, the After Effects and all
they
that.
They may have had someone record that.
Do a little voice.
It went too perfectly with it. I don't think they could have lifted that from somewhere. Right? I was kind of wondering that myself. Like, did they lift this from somewhere? Or because it sounds almost too perfect.
Yeah, it did go very well with it. I don't know if anyone out there knows that, but I mean, they might have just done a Fiverr job.
Yeah, well, yeah.
All right, so if you don't know, John Travolta is still out there making movies. They just aren't coming to theaters anymore. And he's made a string of, I'd say, 5 or 6 of these geriatric actioners that are in the Liam Neeson vein.
A little cruel.
Well, that's what they are. I mean, right? That's like this whole subgenre.
Yeah.
I feel like the first one of these, the unofficial first Taken was Ransom, the Mel Gibson movie from about 20 years ago. Because that was like the whole guy past his prime, needs his fucking kid, and he's going to do whatever he has to get it. Now, they've morphed into... the guy turning into Steven Seagal, basically, without being Steven Seagal. Because all these guys are like advanced fighters on top of it.
Yeah.
You know? It's not enough to believe that a 60-year-old John Travolta is going to beat the shit out of a 25-year-old, you know, musclehead. But on top of it, he's, you know, some sort of martial arts expert. But these I Am Wrath posters that are coming out for this movie that he's got coming out straight to streaming are blatantly ripping off Tom Cruise flicks. And I've shown you a couple of them. It's going to be on the main page when you go to this podcast on moviemavericks.com. And the one we have on there is such a visual imitation of Jack Reacher. Honestly, it's lawsuit worthy.
I don't know if it's lawsuit worthy. A lot of the movie posters are looking more and more the same across films, right? I mean, we've seen this a lot.
We've seen in the past things other B movies take posters from unrelated regular movies.
I'm not even talking about B
design,
movies, man. I mean, we've seen a lot of things. I mean, the whole Benedict Cumberbatch thing, you know, where they showed all of his movie posters and they're all incredibly similar.
Yeah, with his back towards
right.
Camera.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen there is definitely, I don't know, some kind of weird marketing thing out there where everyone's making the same damn movie posters. I don't know. And the Tom Cruise posters are very similar as well.
Well, the other one like this specifically looks like the amount of fake hair that they put on Travolta in some of these and facial hair and tanning. With the Photoshop effects are like looking at a girl's Instagram account. You know, like is that a human being under there? What the fuck is that? One of these has a Mission Impossible font that is – I mean, really, that's clearly Mission Impossible font.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I do wonder, though. I mean, there's so many of these, and they do look very similar to that. You have to wonder how many of these are meant for foreign marketplaces, you know, just to give – because when you think about, like, stars still, right, obviously foreign, Tom Cruise has a big following foreign, and Travolta might as well. So it might be a good idea to kind of make you – think of both of them, right? Or at least if you're trying to sell John Travolta, make you think of Tom Cruise.
Yeah, these are like foreign territory sale.
Make person. You think of the other Scientologist, yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, you stepped in the puddle. I wasn't going to say it. But yeah, that's probably what there's some sort of connection there. And these are roles that Nicolas Cage said no to, and he does say no on occasion. So John Travolta said, I'll do it.
I don't think he did.
I'll do it. Let's move on to talk about a streaming pick. What do you got for a streaming pick of the week? You got anything you've seen on the streaming that you want to recommend?
No, I got nothing. I mean, everybody knows everything. I can't.
It's out there.
Streaming's pretty bad right now as far as I'm concerned. It's rough to find something on there to watch. If it's not a TV show. Yeah, I don't know. What are you watching?
I'm going to throw out there A Most Violent Year, which was on my top 10 list a couple years back. It's on Amazon streaming right now. It's free if you have Prime membership. Definitely check it out. There's really, like Trevor said, there's nothing that's worth streaming on the whole right now. Netflix just did a whole month release, and it was all back catalog titles. And
yeah,
well, that's fun to fall asleep to. It's not very fun to necessarily watch for a show.
You've seen them all.
We're a little star for reviews here, which is what you're going to hear in our next segment.
I need some new stuff. Yeah, right.
Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back with reviews for a couple of classics, or maybe not so classic.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
He brings the popcorn. She brings the roses. Subject Cinema, a tasty new film topic each week with a side order of film reviews.
Yum.
T.C. Kirkham.
Ba-dum-ching.
Kim Brown.
What?
Over 500,000 listeners, and you could be the next one. SubjectCinema.com.
Real movies for real people.
Okay.
And this is a fake podcast for real assholes.
He brings the lube. He brings the dildos.
He's an all-around good guy. All right, he brings the party. So let's talk about reviews. We don't have reviews for anything new because we've been watching old shit, right? We've been stuck in the 80s and 90s, and I like it there. I like it there.
We'll stay there.
I understood filmmaking back then.
I don't know.
It was a little. Oh, come on! It was a little bit more simplified, don't you think?
A little bit.
I mean, I could visually follow what was happening on screen. Oh, yeah. Nowadays, it's just like a blur of like what.
That's
the
because
fuck
they didn't.
That?
They couldn't. Yeah, can't really do all that work.
I just
it was
feel like
a
there
slower
was
time.
Solid professionalism and craftsmanship that is now turned to just giving it to second unit and computer department heads. That is.
Oh well, everything's touched digitally now. You know.
Yeah,
I mean, to watch something that's just filmed, you know, and it's like, that's just, like, if you went there, you'd see that.
That's what you were saying in our retro podcast crazy. About Maximum Risk. You were saying, you know, just some guys with a camera, basically.
It's great to see that. Yeah, just, I mean, use the locations. You're there. That's the world we live in. Like, there's no need to go and redo the mountains because they don't look quite perfect. Like, that's just, that's laughable to me, right? I mean, really?
I understand doing that for television
shows. So confused.
Things like Gotham that add extra buildings to the Gotham skyline and things like that.
That's different.
To the production value.
And that's not what I'm talking about. You know, I'm literally talking about things like changing, you know, mountains and things. And it's different. Again, like if you want to compare Mad Max, okay, but that's different, you know, and that's a different kind of world. I'm okay with like CG worlds and things and creating things like that. But if it's just going to be like a normal movie, like a James Bond movie, leave the fucking mountains as they are.
Well, there you go, from Trevor. He wants to see clouds and mountains as they are.
I want to see shit as they are. You know, I don't need CGI stuff. It doesn't need to look perfect. I think that actually kind of ruins it, doesn't it? I mean,
for certain elements, no.
Perfection.
In a Michael Bay film, I come to expect things like that. In every movie, I don't want that.
So. Well, there's no reason to come to expect that in a Michael Bay film. I mean, when you think about
the
older
stuff, things.
They're not. That's only he doesn't do it though, right? I mean, it's not him. That's the studio doing that, and I disagree that it's a good thing, but a lot of his stuff's, I mean, I don't know, but if you're talking about Transformers, again, that's a little bit different, right? You're talking about destroying a city and stuff. Yeah, that's going to be fake. So, but yeah. I don't know. I mean, do you really need to take away, like, the cinematography of just having a shot and capturing a moment? I mean, you're not capturing a moment anymore. You're, like, molding it every pixel. It's,
Thankfully, the movies we got to review on tonight's episode, there'll be no city destructions in them, which is refreshing, because about once a week I see an American city destroyed on film, and it's just becoming mind-numbing to me and just very boring. It's the building and city destruction in movies today is what the car chase was to movies in the 80s. It's just ubiquitous. It's like you'd fucking tune out. If I never saw another city get destroyed on a massive level in a movie, I would be okay. I mean, I remember when it was a novel kind of thing, when Armageddon did it.
Wasn't this what exactly what you're complaining about? Isn't that what everyone's talking about? Like, doing this over and over again, at some point, people are going to go, yeah, we've seen it.
I think that's going to happen with this X-Men movie, to be honest with you. I mean, from the trailer.
Yeah, but that doesn't count. I mean, whether the X-Men movie makes it or not, it has to happen with one of these fucking big Marvel movies at some point, right?
I don't know.
Captain America 5, you think that's still going to be?
We'll talk about this in 2036 on Podcast 1000. Yeah, right? What's going on about it? Fuck. But we're going to review some old stuff tonight, and we did that retrospective podcast on Maximum Risk. We got a lot of feedback on that. Thank you guys for that. And we want to talk now. Trevor saw a different Van Damme movie, one that I had actually dissed on that retro podcast, Nowhere to Run, 1992's Shane Wannabe, right?
Yeah. I mean, kind of a Western, I would agree. I mean, Nowhere to Run, definitely the idea of the outlaw who is come to town and winds up helping the townspeople. It's not really the townspeople, but kind of. More or less, he protects this lady and her kids from the evil investment people who are trying to buy her land. Loved these 90s tropes like this. It's just, how many 90s movies were people trying to buy land and like force people off their land and
greedy
shit?
Land developers was like a major villain in the 90s.
Yeah, that was like, apparently that was the evil everyone was afraid of.
Like mini malls coming to take our fucking town.
Yeah. How dare they pay us three times what our land is worth.
They want to put a Walmart here? Fuck that.
Yeah, I want to barely hold on with the cattle that I have. You know, I was like, all right.
I rewatched this too, and I watched it on VHS, which was just the way to watch this.
Really? No.
They're talking about going, which was
not
you know,
the way to watch this.
A mainstay in the video store back in the day.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't go into a video store without seeing this wonderful VHS cover of Nowhere to Run.
And the first 30 to 40 minutes of this movie are the best part of this movie. I love the developing relationship with the kid and the E.T. references and kind of the E.T. You know, there's a lot of E.T. elements in this. You're going into the house and the ball and all that kind of stuff. I love that working.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job of taking him, just a terrible human being and having him warm up, you know, and obviously, you know, the kid was the catalyst to it, but kind of having him realize that he doesn't have to be, you know, that horrible person.
The original title of that script was Pals, and that speaks to the fact that the kid and the Van Damme character are really the whole point of that movie is their relationship and the bond there. And the sweetness of that Culkin actor, I mean, it's one of the Culkin childs.
Kieran.
And really, it holds that movie together. The kids in that, both the kids in that movie are wonderful child actors.
Yeah, the little girl I thought was a little
She's a little on the nose, but she's even younger. I mean,
yeah, I know. She's just a little girl.
And Rosanna Arquette, they had beef on set, her and Vandana, really? But they have great chemistry in this movie.
Yeah, they have a wonderful chemistry. She looks great in this movie. I do remember, the beginning of this movie as a kid, specifically because
she's showering
of the nude scene. Yeah,
I'm sure everybody remembers that. You gotta love that Joss Ackland is the bad guy in this, who was also the bad guy in Lethal Weapon 2, mm-hmm. and specializes in playing these. You know, I just remember him saying, "I've got diplomatic immunity in Lethal Weapon," and I feel like he's gonna say that in every movie. Like, he's one of these assholes. Like, he's like a dick version of Anthony Hopkins, you know?
Yeah, he is. I mean, I'll agree with that. With you
and
there.
Then you got your main henchman is your Silence of the Lambs. Put the lotion in the basket.
Right. Ted Levine, the guy, the captain from Monk.
Who, once again, we saw in and out one time. Remember that?
Yeah, I mean, I really think he's great in this, personally, as a bad guy. He's kind of he's creepy enough and believable enough that he would kill people. They should have made him a little bit more evil, I thought. Like, he should have done more, you know, but instead they fell back on the 90s trope again of just having his goons come out and, like, you know, pour oil on the field. She ain't gonna be growing anything here.
Might as well move. Like, you can't get a crop going.
Yeah. It's like, holy shit, man. And the one thing that I love about this movie is he beats the shit out of these guys. Right. And then it immediately cuts to, like, him doing something, like, when he first, she's being terrorized by them. Right. And he comes up and he beats the shit out of them. And then it immediately cuts to him eating in their living room and then her kind of interviewing him and whatnot. But, like, what happened to the bad guys? Like, do they just leave them out there? And, like, when they were, you know, the second time he ran into him, when they were ruining her field and letting her cattle out and stuff, and he kicked the shit out of them. Like, does he send them on their way and make sure they leave? Or does he just leave them there and they just go inside?
They know what's better for them. They know what's good to go home.
Right? I mean, wouldn't they just get up and, like, continue doing shit? I don't...
It's basically like the old Westerns, like, where guys would get up and, like, rub their jaw and be like, "I'll be back." You know what I mean? Like, run off.
They don't even do that. They just cut away. They're like, bam, last kick to the head. The guy falls. Okay, we're done.
Some good sequences in this movie, but really it did not hold up for me from what I remember, because, like, this was part of that seminal Van Damme canon, and I just didn't mm-hmm. I just expected more from it for whatever reason. After that first 40 minutes or so, especially when the lover, the other sheriff guy, her like her current lover until sure. Van Damme comes into the picture, because I mean, this is the kind of character she is. She's this mom of two, single mom, who's fucking the local sheriff, and then the criminal comes and stays in the is allowed to stay in her house, and she's fucking him. Her kids would be taken away from her.
Oh, are you kidding me? By the end of this movie, it's so weird. I mean, this is clearly an alternate universe. Like, the last half of the second act and then third act especially are just make absolutely no sense. And you have to admit, the other thing about this movie that's interesting that really shows you what a different time we live in now is he has a huge penis line.
Yeah, with the little girl.
Which is just something that would not happen nowadays, especially because even when it happened, I kind of thought, aren't people wondering why, like, it's weird because the mom's like, everyone laughs, like, they joke, like, no one thinks that he, like, showed her his penis, like, he, like, flashed or tried to molest or anything. Like, that's not where everyone's mind goes. Where today,
the little boy immediately does say she saw him bathing. You know, he does. There is a line in there, but it is Tim.
I know that,
ear,
but you know that, in today's world, they would go immediately to that. Like, there would be, like, I don't know, there would be something would happen there, you know?
That line would just have been cut before at a test screening. Is exactly what would happen. There's no way that. But it's
so innocent, though. I mean, when you see this movie, it does make you realize, like, we live in a time where, you know, innocence is definitely lost in today's world.
Yeah, I will agree. So you liked it, though, huh?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was better than I thought it was going to be. You know, it was less. Like you say, I think you thought it was going to be more of a regular action movie. I actually thought it was a little bit deeper than I remember it being, which I was surprised of, you know.
Deeper, huh? I don't know.
Yeah, well, he's going through, I mean, just the taking him as this horrible person and putting him in a situation where, you know, he kind of has to deal with that. And I thought they did a pretty good job of setting that up with his dead friend, who then leaves him, you know, the voice message and everything, and kind of setting it up even more for him to not be a bad guy.
The second Van Damme movie in a row we've watched with a tape recorded message to the deceased character.
Well, that's like high technology, you know? People are leaving dead messages behind to other people.
I've never recorded a message just in case I die. That
in today's world, that would be like a fucking email that someone sent or like a voicemail or some shit. You know, that's totally legit in today's
text
world.
Text message, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I looked at 1986's Raw Deal, the Schwarzenegger film that really is, like you said to me off air, is kind of the forgotten Schwarzenegger movie. This is... really was his bomb. Any movie Schwarzenegger did with R in the title was not really a success outside of The Running Man. You had Red Sonja, Raw Deal. I mean, he needed to
Red
stay
Heat.
Red Heat. Yeah, he needed to stay away from it.
Yeah.
And this is – I'd say Red Heat's pretty forgotten, but I think Raw Deal because
Raw Deal, I think even more. When you mention Red Heat, you're right, it's forgotten, but people remember it when you mention it. But a lot of people, when you say Raw Deal, they haven't even seen it.
And this is the movie where it's so bizarre to me because this is – Schwarzenegger is an FBI guy who's been off screen, of course. He's been demoted and forced to either resign or demote himself to be the small town sheriff. And then he gets recruited by his old mentor to go and infiltrate the Chicago mob to get revenge for the mentor's son who was killed protecting a witness. But then the fucking movie totally switches mid-gear halfway through, and it's really about this mob boss who wants $100 million worth of cocaine recovered out of the police vault. And then it goes back to, like, the mentor being shot and having to, like, regain his footing. And you're like, what? The movie overcomplicates itself for no fucking reason over and over again. And
because nothing's happening.
Nobody stops to even make a comment that, you know, Schwarzenegger sounds like a Russian. Or a foreigner, at least.
Oh, I know.
And he's supposed to be a mobster.
This is back. Like, this is like a heavy accent, Schwarzenegger, in this one.
This is not refined acting by Schwarzenegger at all. He's got a drunk scene in here that is embarrassing, to be honest. It was like, wow, this is not good. This is not good here. But I do like a lot of this movie. And this movie kind of exists to me in this like unofficial trilogy with Code of Silence and Above the Law, where it's like 1980s Chicago mobsters and they all drive these oversized Cadillacs and no one's in good shape, but they're supposed to be like these big tough guys, you know, and our action hero kicks the shit out of him because obviously he's in shape and up to date. I don't know. I did get a lot of kicks out of this movie in parts, but you can tell this really wasn't tailored for Schwarzenegger, mostly because there's no one-liners and the lack of humor that every other of his movies takes advantage of. When was the last time you saw this?
You know, a couple years ago.
Yeah?
I do watch this one every once in a while.
I like when he comes home in the beginning and his wife has she's making cake and it just says shit on it. She, you know? It's a strange scene, but it's one of the more effective scenes in this. And what is Robert Davi doing in this as the bad guy, but he's not really – they're like confused who the bad guy was in this movie. Do you recall who you thought the bad guy was? Because there's about three different –
I don't remember now.
It's almost like Last Man Standing, that Bruce Willis movie where
the
two mob bosses are warring. But there's also like the henchman who doesn't like him. And then there's a cop who's after them. And
I just remember he goes to the the construction site.
Well, yeah, there's four car chases in this movie. Yeah, and he just drives around shooting a machine gun out the window.
Right, yeah. It just reminded me whenever when I saw I don't know why. Not a good connection. But Jack Reacher, just for some reason.
I could see what you're saying.
Just because, I mean, they're kind of similar. Like, as for Jack Reacher being like a very kind of a 90s movie, it just reminded me of this movie for some reason.
I can see what you're saying. Yeah. You're not totally off base there. Oh, what else did I see? I saw Disclosure. I watched Disclosure again. You seen that recently?
I saw it a couple years ago as well, man. It's a bad one.
It's okay.
It's so bad it's kind of good, but it's so fucking weird, man.
Let's before we get into the movie, what is the second best Michael Crichton movie that was made? Because we know Jurassic Park was the first one. What's the second best one? Is it Rising Sun? Is it this?
Westworld?
I'm talking about that was a book beforehand. I think he just directed that. I think he wrote and directed that. I'm talking about book like Coma.
I mean, Westworld was a book.
Was it a book?
I'm pretty sure.
I didn't think it was a book. I didn't know that was part of his canon. Really? I'm only thinking of the shit ones, you know, the adaptations like...
maybe it's not a book.
Things like Timeline, Congo, you know, shit ones that came out in the wake of this. Really, really bad ones. And I thought Rising Sun was pretty good but flawed. But I thought this movie is really fucking weird. And the computer technology angle of this is hilarious because the virtual reality simulator that they have at the end, it's like the big climax, is shit you still can't fucking do today. It's like Lawnmower Man. It basically is Lawnmower Man.
What is it? Oh, it's, well, it's much like the, you know, the Linux operating system, or the Unix operating, excuse me, that she uses in Jurassic Park, that is just, you know, it's 3D and you move around it and stuff. And it's like something that you would just never do. It's so unintuitive and it's slow as fuck to get to anything. I was like, man, if this was a regular, like, Windows, like, fucking desktop, man, this shit, we'd be done with this in 2 seconds.
There is that strange, I mean, this was the sexual harassment movie that was in the wake of the Anita Hill trial, which HBO just did that film, Confirmation, with Kerry Washington in it right now, so that's getting a little bit of heat. And this was on, and I was watching this, and Demi Moore plays that perfect bitch, right? Because she is the villain in this movie. This is a total... movie that's, I don't want to say afraid of women, but they present women in an extremely negative light in this movie.
Big time.
They really do. And they try to offset that by having a female lawyer and, you know, and a sympathetic wife. But
well, she's such
she
a
is the
bitch
villain
in this.
And she is so good playing terrible. That character, though. Isn't she? This is Demi Moore at the kind of the height of her prowess of doing that.
Well, it does do a good job of, like, getting you hot under the collar, of, like, just being angry at her.
Because it's well written, this movie. Paul Antanasio, who did this.
It's just so weird.
Yeah, it is, though.
It is, man. It's so weird.
There is a strange. It's also a strangely homophobic movie. There's a couple lines, and Donald Sutherland. There's a strange fantasy sequence where Douglas is dreaming, but Sutherland comes on to him and tries to kiss him in an elevator. Do we call that? And he wakes up from the dream, which has nothing to do with anything other than the fact to let you know it's not only afraid of women, it's afraid of homosexuality. And you're like, God, this movie is not aging well. And this is from 1994. But that central sex scene, and Douglas's was known for these erotic thrillers. You know, obviously Basic Instinct was a huge hit, Fatal Attraction, and then this one. And you put this up with something like – and I like Michael Douglas. I'm actually a big Douglas fan. But put this up with something that's intelligent and really sexy and well done, like A Perfect Murder. You can't even stand up to it at all. I mean, Perfect Murder wins every time.
Well, I mean, Disclosure's silly. Like, when it comes
silly
down
is the best
it,
term for it.
Yeah, it really is. And it takes itself way too seriously. You know, I mean, movies like this, you know, they're kind of like the story part of a softcore film, right? They're like, it's too serious, but there's not enough sex in it.
The central scene, though, is pretty good, though, still. I will say that. It's still pretty pretty sexy.
Yeah.
You know, I was surprised at how far it went for studio filmmaking. I don't remember it being that. Mm-hmm. It's no Basic Instinct or anything like that. You know, I was still surprised on a mainstream level how it went, because I don't remember this really being known for that scene particularly, but more for the overall
sexual
harassment angle. You know, basically,
right? I mean, and the ending, as you say, I mean, the futuristic, going into it and all that,
going into a 3D simulator to erase a file, right? Like you said, that would take one click on a desktop.
It's the silliest thing that you've ever seen in your life. It's really weird, man. I'm like, why? I don't know. That's just like people who don't understand technology making movies, you know.
That's exactly what it is. And I love
so weird.
It have this office that's all, you know, the office that he works in, I swear to you, is the same office that was in Wolf, the Jack Nicholson, where he's in the newspaper business.
Yeah.
It looked exactly the same. The production design was either the same year or shortly thereafter. It looks very, very similar. But not something that I would go back and look at. But again, I think it might be the second best Michael Crichton film adaption.
I mean, I don't know. I need to see a list in front of me before I could make that assumption. But I don't know. I mean, Michael Crichton stuff's pretty terrible in general, is it not?
Even the stuff that he just directed, like Physical Evidence with Burt Reynolds and Teresa Russell. I mean, Runaway isn't very good.
No. But Runaway's fun.
For what it is, yeah.
Because it's silly and stupid.
Right, yeah.
And it has Tom Selleck in it. Yeah, I did like Westworld, but like you say, it wasn't a book, so I guess I really.
No, let's not forget about one of the ultimate duds he did, and I'm not even talking about Congo or Timeline. I'm talking about
Sphere.
Yeah,
which is terrible.
What I was talking about.
It's a terrible movie. Yeah,
I went back and looked at something, and in 1994, when Disclosure was out, 6 of the top 20 grossing movies were novel adaptations. You had Clear and Present
Danger.
Yeah,
well, the 90s was big for that.
Interview with a Vampire, sure. The Client, Disclosure, Forrest Gump, obviously. I mean, mm-hmm. And there's a few other ones that weren't even amongst the highest grossing that were just on the list.
I mean, you know? Grisham and Clancy stuff was being made, right?
And Rice, obviously, like I said, was and now you have Crichton and stuff. So it's like,
yeah, it was a big deal. Books were big for whatever reason.
And Stephen King movies were being, you know,
yes, of course.
So,
but they were all very serious stuff. You know, I don't know. Like nowadays, we do see a lot of books, but it's all the young adult stuff.
Yeah, I mean, 1994 itself was The Shawshank Redemption, which is probably, you know, one of the most beloved. And I know Forrest Gump was a novella, but it still, you know, it was a novel form. All right.
Well, I mean, that counts because Green Mile as well, I would count.
Oh, Green Mile, great. I want to go back and look at that. Have you seen that recently?
Not in a long time.
I've been itching to go back and revisit that one.
Watch some John Coffey.
Hey, John Coffey. I just want to see him work out that urinary tract infection. I really get concerned about him every time. He's like, ooh, dirty ass you've been fucking. All right, let's go to Trailer Attic.
Wow.
Yeah, that was aggressive.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
I do like when the Family Guy did the Shawshank Redemption joke or whatnot about it. And when he gets out of jail, it's like, Peter's farts never made a sound again. some Family Guy shit for you.
Yeah, Family Guy with that irreverent humor. All right, what do we got? Okay, we got The Founder, which is Michael Keaton.
We're doing The Founder first.
Oscar performance, right?
Is it not? I mean, yeah, I thought this was a great trailer. It looks like a great movie. It looks like a great performance. I love that this trailer starts, and I think, fucking A, this looks terrible, and then it immediately gets really good.
Yeah, even from the start, I liked what he was doing there.
I agree with that.
He was such a burnout. This is, you know, Death of a Salesman in a lot of ways.
Doesn't it feel like every other kind of movie like this where they starts out very simplistic, like, oh, who are you selling to? Oh, this and that, and rah, rah, you know. I don't know. I feel like I've seen that a million times.
It reminded me of that, I think it was called, I don't want to say it was Real Genius. I cannot recall what it was. It was the one with the Greg Kinnear where he played the inventor of the windshield wiper.
The windshield wiper one? Oh,
yeah.
God, yeah.
I didn't mind that one. Did you see that
it's
one?
It's a terrible movie. Are you kidding me?
It wasn't terrible. It was just very by the numbers.
It was very boring is what it was. I mean, it's a terrible movie. The guy does nothing the whole time. Not to mention that invention is just dog shit. I mean, I find it, I don't know. How can you sensationalize something like that? They managed to do it somehow. It's so stupid.
Hold on.
Because do you really...
The windshield wiper invention's dog shit. You want to see the fucking movie about the McDonald's founder?
Yes, because this looks way better.
Humanity has benefited from this.
Better because, I don't know, it looks like a better movie. I mean, the windshield wiper thing does nothing, right? He has this fucking... The whole idea that no one could come up with this still to me is baffling that, you know, people who were much smarter than this guy being employed at the auto places couldn't build a fucking intermittent windshield wiper. It's like one of the easiest things possible. It's just silly. But, you know, he does it kind of with off-the-shelf parts, whatever. But the whole movie is just he, you know, gets sucked into the lawsuit thing and just nothing happens. Right, he just kind of waits it out and eventually plows through it, right? This movie is at least, this guy's an asshole. He comes in, he has these crazy ideas. He basically steals fucking McDonald's from, I know, it fucking looks great. I mean, there's actually some excitement in this movie. There's zero excitement in that other movie.
Yeah, well, the difference is the other one was he was he was the victim. And in this, Keaton is the villain. I mean, which is
may be his own victim, right?
Or he's eventually. I think it's the whole salesman thing, the lowbrow salesman with no money, hard luck life, becomes the tycoon,
right?
And
yeah.
Takes no prisoners and makes everyone's life miserable because his was.
But does something that no one has done before as well. I mean, you know, this is to me this is interesting.
Once another, you know, basically another peg in a brilliant late career resurgence.
I mean, did you know that all this went down behind the scenes for McDonald's?
All.
I mean, I knew all these people were involved, but I had no idea this was the story. Yeah, I didn't know that the people got screwed over like this.
I thought it was some sort of harmonist. I should have known better. I thought it was a harmonist.
Yeah, right? Yeah, but again, I mean, Mike Keaton just looks fucking great in this. I mean, so good. And, you know, the rest of the cast looks great as well. But as you said, like, I wouldn't be surprised if this is some sort of a contender for him anyways.
Well, since we're on the topic of contenders, let's stay with Snowden, which is the Oliver Stone film that was pushed back from that Oscar window of last December to a May-June release date. And this is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's second biography. I'm sorry. Not a biography, a biopic. Thank you. He didn't write the book himself or with anybody
else. We got
it.
We get what you want. Yeah.
Thank you.
We get what you're going for. We got what
you mean. Better than The Walk because he's not playing a French.
My God, I know, right? But what's with? I mean, why is he doing a weird accent again? He's doing Ashton Kutcher.
Is that what it, I was trying? I was trying.
Isn't that
to
what it sounds like?
Sounded like?
It sounds like Ashton Kutcher, man.
Okay, maybe I gotta rewatch it because I was watching it. And I go, who does he sound like? Like I kept going, is it Channing Tatum? Like no, and I couldn't think of. Maybe that's exactly who it was supposed to be. I'm gonna have to look at that again. But
I don't know. Is that what Edward Snowden sounds? I guess I've never heard Snowden speak before.
This movie looks very, very intriguing.
This movie looks great.
A little bit more excited. When I saw the one sheet and just kind of read the synopsis, I didn't think I would have any real interest in this movie, even though it's a valid story to tell. I just didn't think it would come off as well visually as it looks here. But
yeah,
I like Stone. I always underestimate his movies.
You talk about over-sensual. Jesus Christ.
Over-sensualization.
Holy shit, I can't. I'm over-sensualized at this moment. Ooh.
We both just had strokes on air. Great. That was yours.
But he definitely takes things to a whole new level as far as like – reality goes, you know, and this is clearly, yeah, I know this is clearly not the true story of Edward Snowden, right? This is like holy shit, this is the most interesting life I've ever seen ever, right? No, not true. There's a lot of shit going on though, so I'm interested in seeing all the little side plots he's got going on here. There's quite a few things that I just was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I can't wait to see this one. One that looks peculiar is Inferno. The trailer was released today for Tom Hanks's latest collaboration with Ron Howard. And I got to say, I enjoyed this book the best out of these three
Jesus Christ, I read these
Dan
books.
Brown movies. I did read this book a couple years back, and this was the most compelling story-wise to me, maybe because it seemed to the most logical in the virus, you know, and things like that. But I can't believe that they're still doing this. I can't believe that the other ones made so much money, and they really did. If you go back and look,
yeah, I know it's ridiculous.
It called for this, and Hanks has no other franchise for an actor that is so solid.
Neither does Howard, really.
Yeah, so they needed this. Both of them really kind of need this. I know Bridge of Spies was a solid performer.
This looks pretty good. I mean, I'll admit to, I really didn't like the other ones. I wasn't a real fan of it, but this looks pretty good. I mean, I like this. This idea seems to suit this world a little bit better than the other ones, I guess.
Is this not a series, though, that gets better as it goes along? Angels and Demon was better than Da Vinci Code.
I really thought they were kind of the same. I mean, I agree with you because it does up the ante. I will say that about it. But this looks like something that's actually worthwhile. And I do like these kinds of movies. He seems to be like researching things and going through and figuring out what's going on. And it is intriguing. Yeah, do you push the button or not? It seems to kind of discredit itself, doesn't it, a little bit?
It just got an intriguing premise, yeah.
Really? Well, I mean, even the trailer, though, it kind of goes on for too long because it sets that premise up and then immediately gives you the idea that that's not really the truth.
Yeah, well.
So it's kind of like, well, what the fuck?
It's not, you know? It was not as heavy-handed of a story as Da Vinci Code particularly is, and Angels and Demon wasn't either. It's a little bit lighter of a touch.
And maybe that's the thing that makes it a little bit better. I mean, I see that. Makes it a little easier to swallow and watch because it's not something that's – I don't know. I mean, the Da Vinci Code really wasn't – it was more self-important. You know, in the end, it was like, yeah, okay. I don't know. It's not that important, right? I mean, it's all fake anyways.
What do you think of this trailer for Bad Moms, the Mila Kunis, Christina Applegate film that is coming out? And I don't know how wide of a release this is going to get, but I got a feeling that –
I think
you
call it
a
Mila Kunis and Christina Applegate movie. I would call it a Mila Kunis and Kristen Bell movie, but
I don't really like Kristen Bell in this trailer.
No, I don't really like Mila Kunis, and I don't really like this trailer. This is kind of a shitty looking bad. I mean, have we finally hit a movie that of you know the bad movies? It's no good. Maybe I gotta be honest with you. There's not a lot of laughs in this trailer.
I think I love one the premise.
Yeah, you know, there's maybe some chuckles. Love the premise. But I don't know, man. I don't see it. I really don't see the laughs.
Yeah, this does look like we're getting hitting the bottom of the barrel with the bad stuff here. Really, I thought the high point of these, obviously Bad Santa set the bar, and then Bad Teacher sure. really was the – and really,
well, I mean, bosses, Neighbors.
Bad bosses.
I know. Yeah, Neighbors, you know, counts as well. So I mean, yeah, we've had a lot of good ones of these, right, I think. So we're kind of due for one that's crummy, and this, unfortunately, looks like it.
We're not moms, so we don't have
right. But I do. I mean, I will admit, like when she's talking about her stupid son at the end was funny.
I thought the whole thing about what they couldn't have in the cookies or you know the salt, sugar, yeah. MSG. Yeah, that, like with
so as long as they get to maybe the bad mom stuff soon enough, right? There could be some laughs in there, but they certainly didn't portray that in this trailer. This trailer was like all the trailers this time around are overly long.
I thought so, too. And particularly in this next one that we're going to talk about, USS Indianapolis, Men of Courage.
Which is a 3.5-minute trailer.
That feels like 3.5 hours. That has major...
Holy shit. Is this movie 4 hours long?
I don't know, but it's a lot more professionally shot.
Well, there's three movies in this.
This is a Mario Van Peebles-directed film that might get a theatrical release. Nicolas Cage starring about the ship that was sunk in the World War II, and then the 5 days that sea men spent while they were getting eaten by sharks.
And then the trial that he goes through afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be, you know, Battle of Midway and, you know,
really, I thought, yeah, I mean, I kind of felt like this was Pearl Harbor meets Jaws.
Which is exactly how they probably sold it. But for how shitty Nicolas Cage movies have been doing and he's been appearing in them, this actually looked like a real movie, though, right?
Yeah, but that may be the problem with this. I mean, this is called USS Indianapolis, : Men of Courage, because I needed that fucking Men of Courage in here. I mean, if the title isn't enough to give you an idea of just how overbearing the story is going to be, when you get to the end of this thing, all the cuts of shit that doesn't take place on a boat, it doesn't take place in the ocean, doesn't take place in the courtroom, starts to make me wonder... what the fuck? I mean, that we have a whole first act of this movie that's going to be fucking have nothing to do with anything, right? And probably a third act that has nothing to do with anything. The meat of this movie is them in the water, right? I mean, that's really what's interesting about this story. But they're gonna try and make this a Nicolas Cage thing about him being the captain and taking the boat over there and, you know, the nuclear bombs and all that kind of shit.
I've long been a Mario Van Peebles fan. I think he's a fantastic actor, really underrated mm-hmm. screen presence, and a really good director when he is given the right material. The movie he did, Badass, based on Sweet Sweetback's Revenge,
right?
Yeah, the movie his dad made, is one of the best movies ever about independent filmmakers making a movie in the spirit of kind of a ragtag group making movies under pressure and bad circumstance. Great, great film to check out. Once again, it's called Badass.
That might be streaming. That was streaming not too long.
Yeah, that's just one of my all-time favorite movies, really. And I love Van Peebles. And, you know, I'm a big fan of New Jack City and Posse and things he's done. But he has directed some mm-hmm. shit, too. Hard Luck, particularly with Wesley Snipes and Cybill Shepherd. I couldn't make heads or tail of that fucking thing. But he's doing this resurgence where he's doing kind of a military movies. He did one called Red Sky with Bill Pullman and Cam Gignett. I could say that guy's name right. And now he's doing this. And I don't know if he's working his way back to theatrical releases or if he got $40 million here, they said, and he's spending it erratically because I can't tell what the fuck this movie is. Like you said, it's overlong. This trailer, I thought I saw the movie
this
in this
crazy.
Trailer. I was done with this trailer like before movie. It was done. Yeah.
I mean, if not, there's going to be a sinking. I mean, the end shot of this trailer is like the Titanic. It's like the Titanic going down. It's. So we have, you know, a movie that takes place in the 40s, right? That's clearly going to be – some of it's taking place in the United States. Some of it's a trial. Some of it's a shipwreck, right? Some of it's people being stuck in the water being eaten by sharks. Some of it's a war movie. I mean, what the fuck, man? That's too much. That's too many things, right?
It's a little confused, but professionally done.
A little confused?
Professional sheen on it, more than I expected.
There's money spent for damn sure. Yeah, I agree with that. The special effects do look... this looks like it's going to be, you know, if anything, you know, a couple hundred screens.
And I'm glad that Cage brought back out that Con Air accent that he'd been hiding for the last 18 years. I've been missing that thing, you know.
But not the hair. Why didn't he bring the hair back?
Tie a ribbon around the old oak tree, honey. Dad is coming home for good, forever. I love his little Elvis man impersonation. He's the awesomest of that. It's like the character from Wild at Heart escaped into Con Air. This world, weird Nicolas Cage world.
Oh, God.
All right, guys, that's going to wrap up our episode 300, if you can believe it. Yes, guys, we have done 300 of these, if not more, with our retros and other incarnations. Thank you all for your continued viewership, we want to say, and for visiting MovieMavericks.com, where you can hear any of our past podcasts, reviews for the old movies we've been talking about on tonight's episode, and much, much more. Thank you guys once again for listening. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!